As the Nationals are a strike away from franchise history and some World Series history. Swing and a miss! Swing and a miss! Swing and a miss! And a World Series Game 7 winning Curly W is in the books!
It's not a dream! It's not a desert mirage! It's Lord Stanley, and he is coming to Washington!
Oh, great crossover.
Got him.
Just left Fournier.
That's called getting put on skates.
Down to two, down to one, and the Washington football team with the upset in Pittsburgh, handing the Steelers their first loss of the season, coming back from 14-0 down. What a win.
The show by the fans for the fans. Covering all four major sports in the District of Champions. It's the DC Crossover Podcast with your hosts, Mike Cerrone and Ben Simpson.
Hello and welcome to episode 112 of the DC Crossover. I am Ben Simpson. That is Mike Cerrone. Glad to have you with us on another Monday evening, or maybe you're listening to this on Tuesday morning. If this is your first time listening to the show, be sure to check out all of our social media accounts. Again, at the DC Crossover on Twitter and at Cerrone16 for Mike's account. And then, of course, the TikTok has been a buzz, Mike. I mean, we're getting...
Buzz.
I mean, here's the thing. It's like, I know a lot of people that, you know, your dumb friends and stuff that will post like a video on TikTok and it gets like 2 likes and no comments, and that's how our videos were for a little bit. But now Mike's kind of taken the reins and thrown up the hashtags and all that stuff. I mean, I saw a video today of ours that had like 7 comments on it. I mean, like, people are actually engaging with the TikTok. So throw out the TikTok again.
So if you want to follow us on TikTok at DC Crossover Podcast, you can definitely check that out. Obviously, we changed the handle from when it was a ton of hashtags. It basically was
underscores, right?
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. Sorry. Yeah. Underscores. It was underscore central there for a second because they wouldn't allow me to do something. But now apparently it's all available. So definitely at DC Crossover Podcast, you can check that out. And we've been definitely getting some numbies, which is nice. I told Ben that we'll start doing a little bit more of like reactions and different things of that nature, kind of teasers also of what we're doing on the show. Not every single week, but obviously if something affects us, then we can, you know, post it and then see what you guys think. I posted a quick reaction / teaser for what we're going to be talking about in this episode, and that has over 400 views already as well. But we did get some feedback on the DC trivia question,
right,
which was last week.
Yeah.
That was nice. and we're getting some likes, which is nice, and we're getting out there. So we're getting some steady numbers. A lot of the last 11 or so posts have gotten around the same amount of views, within like 40 of each other. So it's pretty crazy how it's kind of rode the bumps a little bit. There was about 3 or 4 videos in there that were like 20 views, and I was like, this is kind of odd. But now they're getting really, you know, really comfortable there in that that good range. So right now, hopefully we're just trying to get more likes and different things like that. I think TikTok is more about the likes than the follows.
Yeah.
Mainly because of the sole fact that everyone knows if you start following people on TikTok, then your feed, your For You page starts to get bloated with all these people that you're following and different things like that. And then you're like, well, I want to see other stuff. So I don't really follow that many people on my personal one, even though I don't post on there. But for us, I only follow like, you know, DC sports accounts and then some other people like betting accounts and stuff like
and
that.
A couple dancing girls, you know.
Oh yeah.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah, throw those in there. Throw those in there too.
That is like TikTok is like 25% women dancing, 25% like clips from like movies and TV shows and
things with
weird like subtitles on them or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's like another 25% of like weird stuff, like real weird stuff. Like there's guys like locked in a shed, like recording a video of himself, like crying or something. You're like, what the hell's going on? And then like the other 25% are like podcasts, you know, like people taking clips and videos of their podcasts and that sort of stuff.
Right.
So it's good to be in that 25%. But there's
I was trying to get a good plethora. And that's why I said let's start doing, you know, a few reactions here or there, obviously.
We'll do a couple TikTok dances, you know.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Just to throw those in there a little bit and kind of diversify the palette here for a little while. But overall, I mean, so far it's looking pretty good for the numbies, and hopefully those numbies look good enough for some of the sponsorships that we're going to be talking about here soon, which is gonna be big here.
Yeah, it's gonna be a big summer for the show, and we'll use a couple more minutes of housekeeping here. Is you know, a couple things. One, this week will be the very first episode of season two of Bird's Eye View with Erica McCall, True Stories of Professional Basketball. If for those who have been longtime fans, she did season one with us last year, I guess, and I think it was 8 episodes. Really went over well. It was focused more on overseas basketball. This season and the show as a whole is going to be focused on just professional basketball in general, not just overseas focused. And yeah, first episode drops on Wednesday morning, so you'll be able to catch that show in a couple different ways. You'll be able to actually catch it if you already follow and subscribe to this show. You'll get that episode. We're going to release it on our feed. You're going to get that episode, but if you don't mind, go throw a subscribe over to Bird's Eye View podcast as well, because there's going to be some content that's going to be on our feed sometimes and on Erica's feed sometimes, and so it's best to just follow both. But yeah, that's coming up on Wednesday, and then Mike and I were talking about this before the show, is this summer we are going to be doing the DC Crossover off season. For those, again, who've been with us for a while, know that we like to mix it up doing like drafts and food stuff during the summertime because baseball's the only sport going and the Nats are terrible. So this summer we're going to have some fun. We're going to do some drafts, have some special guests on the show doing some food stuff. It's going to be a blast. That will start in the first week of June. And that'll run through basically the end of August, and that'll be the DC Crossover off-season. Same show. You don't have to go subscribe to anything else. It'll be right here, but it's just going to be a little more loose. Mike's going to be giving us some seltzer review of the week, I guess, something like that. So that's going to be good.
You mentioned it to me that I should probably do that, and I don't mind going down the seltzer aisle at Total Wine and More and getting a nice, you know, 4 or 5 pack,
and there's
six pack,
so
whatever
many
the heck it is.
Seltzer brands now. I mean, think back like 3 years ago, there was not that many
White
seltzer
Claw,
brands.
Truly.
That was it. And now it's exploded. Like, I think 2020, because everybody was like inside and drinking, because that's all we could do. I think like 2020, the seltzer game just exploded. Like, every major beer company suddenly had a seltzer, and then you had all these other, like, you know, smaller breweries be like, all right, we need a seltzer too. I mean, I know Aslan Brewery in Herndon and things like that, they've got a couple seltzers on their menu. I haven't had one, but because it's like, you know, if I'm at Aslan, I'm going to get their beers. I mean, that's what they're known for. But I know they've got a couple different seltzers there. I feel like it's like a requirement now. Like, if you make alcohol, it's like you got to have a couple seltzers because they're just a great summertime drink for sure.
I think, honestly, I think I pioneered this because I was the first one, I believe, and I'm going to stand by that, that when COVID, the lockdown was happening, I practiced smart drinking because I think when the COVID whole entire lockdown and everything like that was happening, everyone was sitting there just slugging beers and doing all this different bad drinking to the point where when you can't go to the gym or when you can't, you know, work or when you can't do different things, you're not getting a lot of movement. It's usually like that situation where you look at your Fitbit or you look at your phone health app and all that stuff, and it says like 72 steps, and you're like, it's been a whole day.
That's right.
Probably
me today. I was in bed quite a lot today because I wasn't feeling well. No, I've got 3,862 steps. So no,
you got Lucy there, right?
Not during the day. Well, she's downstairs. Not by herself, but yeah. I just meant I worked from home
doing
today,
the dishes.
And I was in bed for most of the day. And so I thought I would only have like 700 steps, but I know exactly what you're talking about, especially
smart
back in the pandemic when you couldn't
smart
leave the house, you know?
Because you get it. And this is my thing anyways now, is you have to have, for smart drinking, the definition of smart drinking is have a couple mixers. It's not that many calories, not a lot of sugar, depending on obviously what mixers you're using.
Right.
You
know, that's key.
You got to use Coke Zero. Mm-hmm. You got to use Diet Coke. You got to do something like that. That's my go-to, Captain and Coke. If I do the Coke Zero bit and all that kind of stuff. And then you polish it off with the seltzies. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest thing. Yes, they are 100 calories, but they aren't. They don't have carbs in them most of the time. They don't have sugars in them most of the time. At least 1 or 2 grams of sugar is nothing. Yeah. And that's the biggest thing. And they got some flavor to them. It's not like you're delicious. Just slugging a Budweiser down, which is Budweiser is the first ever beer I drank. And I was like about to puke my brains out, even though I was younger at the time. But it's like, it's funny though, because that's the smarter drinking. And now since the COVID lockdown, they have been creating, like you said, all these seltzers, every business, Corona, Bud Light, Truly, White Claw. I mean, I went down the seltzer aisle, and because Total Wine & More was out of the 30 rack of Truly Lemonades, my favorite and your favorite, because they were out, I ended up saying, you know what? Obviously, I dabbled in the clearance section, but at the same time, I ended up saying, you know what? I'm going to try some new ones. So I did get two Robbers, three Birds, a lot of numbers apparently in these seltzer names.
That's the key.
I got a lot of different types. There's also one from Victory, the Victory Brewing Company. I think that's might be in Sterling. I'm not exactly sure. I've heard of it before, but I tried some of these, and some of them are good. Some of them are bad. I mean, nothing compares to the Truly Lemonades, but at the same time, I mean, this is not that bad. This is not that bad. It's gonna do the job, but at the same time, you look at it, and that's what you call smart drinking. Start with the hard stuff, end with the Night Celsius, and you have a nice Three Birds right here. And they're not. I don't even know where they're located, so they can't be a sponsor of the show.
Dr. Mike, everybody, giving you the advice.
Get it.
Smart drinking. Let's hit the rewind machine and talk about the previous week in D.C. sports in case you missed any of these games. We'll start with the Washington Nationals. Another lackluster week for them. 12-24 now on the season. Still last place in the NL East, where they will probably be all season long. Tuesday lost to the Mets 4-2. The Nats were actually up 2-0 after five innings of work because Corbin did a pretty nice job. Five innings, three hits, no earned runs. But the Mets score 3 and 6 off of Carl Edwards Jr., who the Nats signed this past offseason. And Nats issue 7 walks and make 2 errors in this game. You're not going to win baseball games if you do that. Wednesday, the Nats actually beat the Mets 8-3. Soto and Cruz both homered in this one. Aaron Sanchez threw 5 1/3, allowed 3 runs in this one. Pretty good day for him. Thursday, Nats lost to the Mets 4-1. Really bad base running. By now, you've probably seen the clip of Soto. Ground ball, Soto's at second. He goes on a ground ball to the left side when he probably shouldn't. He gets tagged out on the play, and then Bell comes like right up behind him, and he gets tagged out. I mean, just disgusting base running. And Yoan Adone walks 5 of the first 10 batters he faces. It's a disaster at Nats Park these days. And then the next series, Friday, the Nats lose to the Astros 6-1. Jose Altuve homers on the very first pitch of the game. Josiah Gray, rough one for a kid. 6 innings, 6 earned runs, 5 Ks, 2 walks. Saturday, a little bit of fun for the Nats. They win 13-6 over the Astros. Yadiel and Michael Franco both homer, and the Nats end the Astros' 11-game win streak. And then Sunday, watched all of this one on Sunday. It was a rough one, 8-0 Astros win. The game was actually pretty close to the first 3-4 innings, and then Corbin, I think it's starting in like the 5th or 6th, started giving up runs here at left and right, home runs. I mean, Gurriel, Altuve, Maldonado, McCormick all homered for the Astros. JV, Justin Verlander threw 5 scoreless, coming off of his almost no-hitter the other last game. And the Nats have lost all 8 of Patrick Corbin's starts. Now, pitching losses, you can't always pin them all on the pitcher because, like, you need your offense to do something. But 8-0, you can pin a lot of this on the pitcher there. Let's move on to the Caps as they wrapped up their season here this past week, Mike.
So the Washington Capitals finished their season losing to the Florida Panthers 4-2 in the series after being up 2-1. Last 3 games, honestly, had to be heartbreakers. I mean, that's all you can say is you can't really say, oh, what a disappointing season and all that kind of stuff. You have to say that the last 3 were heartbreakers that we had in the past week. Game 4, the Caps lose 3-2 in overtime after being up by 1 goal. Honestly, they shouldn't have been up by 1 goal. Ilya Samsonov had a great game, but he got beaten on a 6-on-5 at that point with 2:04 remaining in the third to send things to OT. Verhaeghe scores a 2nd goal of the game. He must be the player of the series. He was on fire later in the series. And he scored with 4:57 into overtime. Panthers outshot the Caps in that game 32-16, so doubling them up. And Kuzi and Oshie scored for the Caps. Really beautiful goals, but at the same time, you know, if you can't hold the lead late, then, you know, I don't know what to tell you. Game five, they lost 5-3 after being up 3-0. How many times are we going to say the Caps had
one of the worst losses I've ever seen?
Oh my gosh, they were up 3-0. I think it was about 12 minutes left or so in the second period. Verhaeghe once again, he sets a Panthers franchise playoff record, which is not that big of a playoff record because the Panthers suck. But the Panthers franchise playoff record with 5-point night, 2 goals and 3 assists. Florida erases a 3-0 Caps lead, as I just mentioned, about midway through the third. So that was unfortunate. Oshie scored twice. Justin Schultz scored as well. Kuzi with 2 assists. So Oshie and Kuzi were showing up. But then you look at game six the other night, lost 4-3. They were up 2-1 at one point. Ended up scoring with 1:03 left in regulation. What a play that was.
That
you
was
have
insane.
To give props for that. That was insane. Your boy Anthony Mantha ended up smacking it out of the air, which, by the way, he has one of the best-looking hockey sticks I think I've seen. It's, like, straight white with, like, chrome on it. It's
awesome.
Legit.
It's awesome.
But they scored. He smacked it out of the air. Then TJ Oshie was basically fighting for it, and that was pretty crazy. But Tom Wilson missed his fifth straight game. So, honestly, I'm hoping, even though the season's over, I'm hoping that Wilson's injury is not a long-term thing. We shall see. I think they're going to start releasing some more info here in the next week. But overall, the Caps, unfortunate. We will talk about it here soon. But moving on to a team that I actually tuned into on Saturday, DC United. Well, I kind of lucked into it. I saw it on TV. But DC United, who had a decent game against Miami, coming back.
Yeah, it was a fun week for DC United, again, as they continue to play well in MLS play. Now, they did play a non-MLS game, the U.S. Open Cup, this past week, I think on Tuesday last week. Lost to the New York Red Bulls. New York's pretty good. You lose 3-0. Non-MLS, you'd like to make a run at a cup, but whatever. But the game that mattered was this one, where they were down 2-0, and they rally and they tie it up against Inter Miami and pick up a point. Taxi scored, Ola Kamara scored. Those are basically the two studs of this team this year. Taxi's just been on fire. I mean, that's, I think, 3 straight games with goals. Unbelievable there. So DC United now 4 wins, 1 tie, 5 losses on the season right now. So, you know, it's fun. Every now and then, especially now, Mike, with, like, hockey being done and basketball and all.
Yeah,
I mean, like,
yeah,
you got the NBA playoffs, but it's not like any of our teams are in it. You can throw on a DC United game every now and then. Let's move on and talk just briefly. We wanted to touch on the Commander schedule release.
We are the Commander.
Now, we're not going to do the bit where we, like, try to predict the record. Like, ooh, right. They're going to go, 8 and whatever. Like, we're not going to do that. But
too early for that.
It's way too early. I mean, we don't even know, like, yeah, there's just so many unknowns right now. But I did want to at least get some impressions of this schedule and kind of any particular games, sticking out to you. Obviously, the two that are, in my eyes, the biggest, or not necessarily biggest, but most interesting to me is the Carson Wentz return to Indy in week 8. And, of course, Carson Wentz returning to Philly for Monday Night Football in Week 10, which is going to be both those games, I think, are going to be pretty fun to watch. And I would love to see Wentz just carve it up against the Eagles on the road.
Right,
of course, my Detroit Lions Week 2, the Commanders on the road in Detroit on 1 p.m. game, that game. So those were kind of the three games that mainly stuck out to me. Anything on your end that you were like, all right, this is a game to circle on the calendar?
The game to circle on the calendar, obviously you mentioned it with Indy and Philly. Also, I think late in the season, one thing to look at is San Francisco. Is Trey Lance going to do anything? Is Jimmy G still going to be there? Yada, 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 because I think both teams at that point are going to possibly be fighting for playoff spots. It's also kind of weird how we have New York, bye week New York. I just don't understand how 2 years in a row, I think last year we played 5 division games in the last 7 weeks. Something. It's like, it's kind of weird how they're doing this scheduling aspect, but it's also kind of cool that you're looking at the schedule and it's, home, away, home, away, home, away, home, away. It's like alternating every single week. But also, if you're looking at it, this actually could spell a good, omen here for our boy Carson Wentz, because if you're looking at some of the away games, he's playing at Indy, which is indoors, at Detroit, indoors. Okay. He also has Houston indoors.
Right.
Dallas indoors at least once. So you're looking a lot of these away games, they're indoors. So you're also looking at some of the games, obviously, versus Cleveland. That might be, you know, difficult in Dallas in January. Who knows what the weather's going to be like then. But in December, on Christmas Eve, you're in San Francisco. Weather should be pretty decent for the most part in California, I would say. A lot better than what it's going to be here. But you're seeing a lot of the games have a chance for him to be successful because they're indoors with a controlled climate. We always hear that, you know, from Jared Goff. Like, oh, is Jared Goff going to do anything because of the weather or whatever? They said the same thing about Drew Brees. They said the same thing about Matt Ryan. Like, all these players that were playing inside domes, same thing with Peyton Manning. They said the same thing about him. So I don't know if Carson Wentz is really on that level, but I think to succeed the most, I think that being indoors, climate controlled, you know, turf field, you know, great stadium or whatever, I think that's going to be a really good omen for him, especially the teams that we play at home are going to be somewhat easy. I mean, you got Jacksonville on the schedule. They're not that great. You're at Chicago in this sense. Tennessee without A.J. Brown. We'll see how Derrick Henry fares after coming off his injury. So you're looking at some of these games. I think that we really have a great shot to get, you know, if as long as we come out. The problem is that we always come out and we always play down to our competition,
yeah.
Which is unfortunate. Like, you know, we have a Thursday night football game against Chicago in Chicago. Are we really going to, you know, play down to Chicago's level? Let's be honest here. That's, you know, week six. So, by the way, I do like, I think I heard this that, I don't know if it's Mike Tirico and Kirk Herbstreit are on the Amazon Prime games. Sure. I know Kirk Herbstreit is on the Prime games, which is Thursday night. But I'm not exactly sure who his partner is. I thought it was.
Looks like it would be Al Michaels and Kirk Herbstreit.
Al Michaels.
Oh, nice.
But yeah. I like Kirk Herbstreit. I like him
a lot, too.
Yeah. So we'll see how he does in NFL games. But I think, I mean, he knows a lot of these guys anyways. But I think it's going to be fun to watch.
I feel like they had him. Didn't they have him fill in? Was it last season?
He did do something.
I feel like he did because I feel like there was a game. A night where, like, the main crew was on a different game or there was something, and I feel like Kirk and Steve Levy or whoever does, like, I don't know, someone who also does the college stuff, I feel like they filled in and they did a pretty good job, and I feel like everybody was pretty positive about it. So
right, yeah, and they got the new ESPN crew, obviously, with Aikman and Buck, so
yeah.
We'll see about that.
A lot of shuffling.
That,
but, it's kind of crazy. Yeah. It's going to be interesting. You, like, forget all about the broadcaster shuffle until the season starts, and you're gonna be like, oh man, like all these guys are in all these different places. I mean, especially Buck being not on Fox anymore, so that's
I think honestly that Indy game is going to be the game to watch because yes, we have he's playing Philly, you know, in week three, but I think the Indy game at that point in time, you're going to see, you know, seven games before that,
mm-hmm.
so you're going to see what record we have at that point, where we're standing, where we are in the standings and all that kind of stuff, because at that point we have played Dallas, we have played Philly, so we have two division games under our belt, and then obviously you got some other tougher games, like I said, Tennessee, we'll see how they come out with losing A.J. Brown and Derrick Henry coming off the injury, but then they also got Green Bay without Devontae Adams now, so we'll have to really see at that point in time what really happens. You also got Kirk Cousins coming back,
sure.
You know, with Minnesota. Now I'm not exactly sure if he's come back yet. But since he left, but at the same time, sure he has, but at the same time, it's like, you got a lot of, you know, rivalry games that are not really rivalries.
You have some juice on these games. I mean,
juice.
That makes you interested in the one other thing I'll point out is, so NFL, released their strength of schedule, for next season. And the Commanders have the quote unquote easiest schedule. Them and the Cowboys,
really?
Based around opponent win percentage. Them and the Cowboys both at, you know, 0.462 or whatever. So like, and the Eagles right above the Cowboys, and then the Giants right above them. So the NFC East apparently has all of the easy. Maybe because they play each other, I guess. But they all have the easiest schedule.
Plays into it
according to the opponent win percentage. So just something to note there. And the Rams, of course, have the most difficult schedule.
Here's a funny little tidbit. So my buddy the other day, he texted me and he's like, yo, let's get some Commander tickets. And I'm like, all right, let's look at some games. He's like, I want to watch Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers. Looking right now, that is the most expensive game to go to.
Yeah. If I was gonna spend my money, my shekels on a Commanders game, I think I'm not going to spend hundreds and hundreds of dollars on a nosebleed to watch Aaron Rodgers just
tickets as low as 106.
Yeah,
like definitely $106 to go to a Commanders game.
Yeah, it's just to watch Aaron Rodgers just carve us up. I mean,
like, yeah, that and FedEx Field sucks. I'd rather go to RFK.
Yeah,
get a piece of concrete.
If you're gonna go to Commanders game, pick one of the crappy games or whatever, and just like go ball out, get some really nice seats for a crappy opponent, or just wait to see if the Commanders
Atlanta,
crap the bed and are bad.
New York.
You know? Right, exactly. So we'll keep an eye on the Commanders stuff, but we wanted to touch on the schedule release. And then before we get to the Caps, which we will spend a little bit of time with, Mike, you found some, was it a Reddit article or BuzzFeed
yes.
article? Okay.
Yes.
Tell me about it.
So the lay of the land here is that the other day, I believe it was March 11th, was Eat What You Want Day.
Okay.
Which honestly is, they're just making days up now.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, that's every day for me.
Hey, it's a national day, guys. Eat what you want. Like, I do that anyways.
Yeah, it's
so,
like, what am I doing the 364 other days?
And I like it how half the time they have it for literally multiple days. So they're like, all right, guys, Eat What You Want Day. And you're like, wasn't that like 4 weeks ago?
Right.
You know,
it's so stupid.
So Reddit ended up making a poll, and people voted on the trashiest foods that are guilty pleasures.
Trashiest I think I have some game show music here.
Oh, give me some show music, man. I'm going to take a sip of Three Birds while you're finding
there
it.
There we go. There's some
lemonade.
There's a little game show music for you. Okay, so these are the worst foods? What is it?
No, the trashiest.
Trashiest foods. Got it.
All right. Man, turn that down a little bit. Just a tad.
Yeah, I am.
Man, that whatever musical instrument is, I think it's blazing in my ears. All right, here we go. All right. Starting with numero diez.
Okay.
Taco Bell.
Trashiest. Okay. I mean, like, I get it. It's
yeah. Well, it's basically like your guilty pleasure that's not good for you.
Yeah, I get it. That's a good
Taco
one.
Taco Bell is number 10.
I would think it might be even higher, actually. But
I thought it would be too, but I think that's more so everyone's guilty pleasure just in general.
Sure.
I don't think they're going to say, because some of these are pretty trashy compared to that. So that's number 10. So I think Taco Bell is a great choice. I think that's a great choice.
It should
I mean,
be
they have
the
10, great items.
For sure.
So number 9. Totino's pizza rolls and bagel bites.
Okay, I like bagel bites. I'm not a giant pizza rolls guy.
Oh, dude, I had those for dinner on Saturday.
There you go. I like the bagel bites. Bagel bites were always my thing. I can devour a sheet pan filled with them, and you just like pop them in your mouth because they're so small. You just go pop, 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 pop. And then, I love
like
it. So the key is you don't do the microwave.
Sounds like a Gatling gun.
Well, yeah, because you don't do the microwave bit because it will get too like soft. You want it to have some structure to it. So you got to go in the oven. Even if you're hungry and you're like, man, I don't want to have to preheat the oven and wait for that and do this. It's worth it because it's got a little crisp to it. And then it's got the soft melted cheese on the top. And you just kill like 55 of them. And then you go take a nap.
Trust me. On Saturday, I went to my parents' house, ate something at like 4. So I wasn't really hungry. Yeah. And I was sitting there, and I was just kind of – I was watching games and stuff like that, and I was sipping on some – it might have been Three Birds at the time. I ended up saying, you know what? It's 10 o'clock. I'm kind of hungry now. So I ended up popping in like 20 Totino's pizza rolls, and once they were done, I put them – I let them dry – or not dry. I let them cool down, and then I ate them in bed.
Yeah, there you go. That's living the dream.
Oh, it was a great night, I'm not going to lie. Alrighty, number 7 or excuse me, 8 here.
Okay.
It's titled Cheap Meats. So Slim Jims and beef jerky and stuff like that.
I've never really been a jerky guy or Slim Jim guy. It's just like I've had it before. I mean, like, I wouldn't like not eat it if somebody made me or put it in front of me, but it's not something I seek out. Certainly not.
Right, and it's kind of weird though. It's like I don't think that's better than Taco Bell and stuff. I mean, beef jerky's good, but I eat it like once a year.
Yeah, exactly. Like it doesn't enter my stratosphere very often.
Yeah, I don't go to 7-Eleven to get a Slim Jim.
No.
Anyways, so the next one is Pillsbury cinnamon rolls.
Oh, classic.
Money.
I mean, there
everyone's
was definitely
fighting over the middle one.
Oh yeah, there was definitely a few like years of my life in school where my dad would just pop in those cinnamon rolls every morning for breakfast, and I would just
wow
I would eat like three of them and like with breakfast. A whole big bowl of cereal and then, you know, be just slow. No wonder I'm falling asleep in first period or whatever. They had like, and then the best part about the cinnamon rolls was you had your, the cream that they gave you was separated out. So you could do your own cream distribution. So like if there was like, for example, like I have a younger brother.
Stop saying cream. It sounds
icing,
weird.
Whatever. So I have a younger brother, and so if he like slept in or whatever, and I got to go to the cinnamon rolls first, I could just put all the icing on mine, and then there was no icing left for him when he gets up. So
yeah, suck it, Will.
Yeah.
So the cinnamon rolls. My mom always makes those on Christmas morning.
Right.
That was always the bit. All right. Next one, Marie Callender's frozen pot pies.
Okay, I mean, I know what those are. I've maybe had them once or twice in my life. I'm sure they're good. I mean, I like pot pies in general, but I just haven't encountered. I feel like I haven't encountered a pot pie in years. Like
yeah,
I can't remember the last
green
pot
box.
Pie I've had. Yeah, yeah. I know. Our girl Marie or Maria, whatever her name is.
Marie. But not Maria. She's not from West Side Store.
Marie. I mean, I've had those before. They are good. They're definitely, certainly not a go-to. But
my
I would
dad
eat the whole
used to
thing.
Love them.
Popeyes are great.
Well, they're not that big. They're the size of a snack plate.
Yeah, that's everything you need.
They're 3 minutes and you're pot pieing it up.
Right.
Alrighty, next one. Pop tarts is number six.
This is another one. I just was never a big Pop Tarts guy. I know they're good. I know everybody swears by them, but they're just never been my thing.
I love, my favorite is the underrated chocolate chip Pop-Tarts.
Okay.
Because everyone's like, oh, let me get that fudge one. Like, I don't want a Pop-Tart that's just chocolate.
See, to
I
me,
like the
Pop-Tarts are like eating cardboard. Like, there's really not a lot there. I mean, it's like I'm eating a piece of cardboard. And there's so much better breakfast options that, like, Pop-Tarts,
yeah.
Let's be honest. Why do we all pretend like Pop-Tarts are good? They suck.
Hey, the chocolate chip ones, man. I don't know what kind of chemicals they put in those damn things. But those things, right. I'd die over those things. Those things are damn good. The chocolate chip Pop-Tarts. Go look at your local grocery store. They're probably in the back because no one really wants to buy them. Yeah. I love them. Next is boxed mac and cheese.
Classic. I mean, so we, of course, I mean, Kraft is obviously like your steady Eddie. Like it's the one that you go to for so long. But I'll tell you, Auntie Anne's or Auntie Annie's, whatever it is, that mac and cheese is so much better than Kraft.
What is it? Is Auntie Anne's or Annie's?
Auntie Annie's mac and cheese.
Wait, hold on a second.
It's
Auntie Anne's.
Sorry, it's just Annie's.
I was going to say, hold on a second. I was like, wait a second. Where are we going here? Because so Auntie Anne's is a pretzel company.
No, I know. So Annie's. Annie's is the go-to. I like the shells and white cheddar. Annie's, that's one
Velveeta.
Of my favorites. But
I think
it's
more so like Kraft, I think.
I mean, Kraft is solid. Like, I would never turn... Kraft is a classic taste. There's nothing better than, like, that moment where you get to put all the cheese dust in, like, when it's all cooked and stuff.
Cheese
and just,
dust,
like, slather
yeah.
that up. The sounds that the bowl makes when you slather that up, I think, I don't even want to talk about it. it's just wild. It sounds like a creature.
I'm lost. I need to go make
them. You know, like when you take a big spoon and like you've got all the mac and cheese made and stuff, and you're just kind of like stirring it up. Yeah, it's like those sounds. It sounds like there's like
a monster from Stranger Things or something.
Yeah, a lot of like sloshing around, but it's good. All right, next one.
Got it. Number three, Kraft singles.
Okay, so just like the piece of cheese. I mean, what are we doing? What are we doing, America? Are we talking about
don't knock it till you try it, man. You open one of those artificial cheeses up, man. That's a good square.
The best thing you do is you get a paper plate, you put a bunch of chips on it, and then you get those Kraft singles and you lay them on top, and then you stick it in the microwave for like 15 seconds. You got your own little nachos. That's trash.
Never seen that trailer trash thing. Oh my god! Usually, oh my god! Usually, I just do the sprinkle cheese on that. But okay, that's a different one.
By the way, you know who has very good underrated nachos? Hard Rock Cafe. We were just there on Sunday because we were downtown, and I mean, like, it's a trashy tourist type thing to go to a Hard Rock Cafe. Like, who the hell goes to those anymore? But I'll tell
like
you,
like a rainforest cafe,
exactly. But like, I'll tell you, their nachos—they have a nacho plate that is like ridiculously good. So underrated tip there,
Margaritaville. If you ever go to Vegas, Margaritaville has the tower, the thing, the towering.
Oh,
nachos.
Like the trash can nachos where it's like a tower. Yeah, I gotcha. Okay.
Well, I don't know why. I don't know. I don't know. Whatever. Anyways, number two, ramen noodles.
All right. Yeah. Last year or 2020, I can't remember which, I went through a big ramen noodle kick when I was like working from home every day. And my routine was I had ramen noodles and then like a PB&J like every day for like a couple months. And then eventually I was like, all right, I got to eat something else. Like, but yeah. I will say, I mean, ramen noodles. And so my bit was, I would warm up the water on the stovetop. You put the water in like a pan, you warm it up on the stovetop. I mean, I'm sure everybody does this way, but stovetop, and then you pour it in there. And then you leave the fork on top of it to keep it enclosed. And then you got to give it, the big key is you got to give it enough time to really sink in there, get those noodles nice and not hard. So you got to... The liquid's got to seep in there, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
The liquid's got to seep.
You know what I mean with ramen?
Well, here's the funny thing. Is ramen, I never had it until I moved into here, and I was like, right. I felt like, man, I wrote that huge check to buy this place. Now I have to go cheap on everything. I ended up going to Lidl, and I got like two ginormous boxes of the ramen noodles. And I never had them before, and I was like, I don't want to heat up the stove. So I ended up getting like a Pyrex bowl, and I put them in the Pyrex bowl, and I broke them all up, and I put them in the microwave. And I had to Google, because it doesn't have the directions on there. I had to Google how long you put it in the microwave for. And
this is just unbelievable. Like I've never heard this.
You want to talk about trailer trash?
Yeah, I was about to say.
Put ramen noodles in a Pyrex bowl.
The whole thing is
they
always say like you can't put the actual ramen cup in the microwave because it will like explode.
Oh, I'm talking about like the instant ramen, like the square.
Oh wow! So you went real cheap. Like you went.
They were like it was like $6 for like 20.
This is what they hand out at the Goodwill. Like
hey, dude. Then I realized I was like, man, what am I doing? And I still have a box of it from a year and a half ago.
There you go.
All right, but emergency. That was pretty bad. So number one, do you have any guesses
for trashy food? I mean, we're talking about just like slices of cheese. And, like, ramen. I mean...
We've got a wide variety. Taco Bell all the way to Kraft Singles.
Yeah, this is... I mean, that's why I don't... I have no idea where this is going to go. Hit me. What is it?
Gas station hot food.
Oh, okay.
So you're talking about taquitos. You're talking about hot dogs. You're talking about the pizza, the gross hamburger, and chicken sandwich that have been in that microwave or that little hot box thing for, like... You know, in a whatever wrapper for, you know, 3 days.
A long time. Yeah.
I'm not gonna lie. I stooped that low on one of the broadcasting trips. I ended up getting a hamburger from there and I got some taquitos, stuff like that. Taquitos never that bad, except for like the ones that like are really hard. But then you have the hamburger in there. If you look at the packaging, like it says like the calorie count is like 900 or something like that. You're just like, this is a hamburger from 7-Eleven, and I can go get a Wendy's Baconator made fresh
for like $3
for a lot cheaper and a lot less calories than 900 calories.
Yeah,
I think.
I've done the 7-Eleven bit with the hot food like once when I was in Chicago on a work trip once, and like a night of drinking, of course, and then like late at night, the only place like there wasn't really anything open, and then we went to a 7-Eleven, and I had like a little pizza, like a couple slices of pizza. But while I was at 7-Eleven, I saw something I'd never seen before. The guy in the 7-Eleven asked for the worker to warm up, like he had like a bun, like a sticky bun or hot bun, and he had like slices of cheese, and he had the worker put the cheese on the sticky bun and put it in the microwave, warm it up, and then give it back to him. I'd never seen that before. It was unbelievable.
That's odd.
Talking about trashy. That guy won the Olympics of trash.
A sticky bun with cheese on it?
Yeah, it was unbelievable. I mean, plus I was like, you know, drunk, so I was just like, what is happening right now? This is unbelievable.
I get it.
I mean, the 7-Eleven stuff, it's like, you know, it's there for you in a pinch if you're desperate. It's definitely not something. It's one of those things you get maybe like once every 10 years or something. Like it's not
when
something.
When you're sitting there, they put a freaking hot dog on a roller and it's been there for 7 hours.
No, it's like it's gray. It's like a
broomstick. It's so hard.
Hot dogs. Do you remember the greatest hot dog place ever? Joe's Hot Dogs in Herndon. Do you remember that from like 20 years ago?
Nope.
All right. Well, they used to. The best part of the opening day for Little League was Joe's Hot Dogs had a stand there, and all the kids that were playing Little League got a free hot dog, and it was
Really?
Best day of my life.
Maybe that's why they're out of business.
Yeah. They were like, we gave rid of everything. Like, we have nothing left. We got to shut the doors here.
Yeah, the kids took all the hot dogs.
Yeah.
But yeah, I never really ventured out to Herndon. I'm out here now, but I never really ventured out.
It's understandable. Yeah. Well, I appreciate you bringing that list. And those are the types of things the conversations we're going to be having in the off season starting next month. A lot of food talk for sure. Getting back to our roots. Back to the roots. We do got to talk a little Caps here.
The Washington Capitals.
I mean, obviously, you know, there's only so much to say. I mean, we talked about it earlier about how, like, heartbreaking the series was and things like that. And, like, you know, the people that, and there was, like, that whole tweet, and we talked about it, I think, last week, you, me, and Dan, that was going around is, like, somebody, I think Mike Wise, had tweeted about, like, this being, like, a sign of affecting Ovi's legacy and stuff and all that stuff. It's just such a terrible take. But I will say it has been, you win a cup in 18, and obviously you can live off that for a long time. But these teams that have made the playoffs since that cup have had opportunities to possibly make runs in the postseason and things like that. And you're just seeing first-round exit after first-round exit. It reminds you of the pre-2018 days, you know? And, like, right. this one especially hurt because, like we were saying when you did the recaps, it's like multiple games having leads. I mean, what was it, 3 games in a row where we had leads and blew the leads? But the worst one, of course, the one that should go down in Caps lore is the 3-0 lead in game 5 that got erased in the second period. Because that one, I thought the game was in the bag. Like, I was already counting my money from the bets I had placed about the Caps winning the series and the series going 7. Like, I was ready to go. I was like, oh, man, I'm going to get like $300 from these bets. This is going to be awesome. And it didn't happen. They blew the lead. They blew the lead the next game and the game before that. And it's just, it was a rough series as a Caps fan to go through not only the heartbreak of losing, but the heartbreak of losing in those fashions. I mean, that
right,
was the rough part.
Right. And that's, I think that's the biggest thing is now when you look back at the previous last couple years or so, 2 years ago, I can't really remember who we got eliminated by. I think for some reason, I think we got out of. No, that was the Reardon years. So they had Trotz, Reardon, and now Lav. So it's been 4 years now since the Cup win.
Yeah, the Isles eliminated us in 2020.
Was that a second round series? No, it was a first round series.
I don't know.
I think it was a first round series. So yeah, so basically you're looking at it, and last year I kind of discredit that because the Boston Bruins have a good team. They also made a trade in the middle of the season for Taylor Hall and stuff like that. So they had two of the top lines in all of hockey. So last year, it's kind of hard. It's similar to the years that we played the Pens and everyone was just up in arms because two of the best teams in the NHL are playing each other so early in the playoffs. And you're just like, why are we watching this? And all of a sudden you see the Canadiens. Like I said, last year, you have to throw it out the window because of the sole fact that the Canadians who made it, and I knew were going to get blown out, and I even called it. I said they were going to lose in 5, and they did. I believe five or four, something like that.
I think it was 5.
You have to go out there and say, last year's kind of a fluke because the Metro Division was so good last year. You know, you got the Pens, you got the Bruins, you got the Rangers, you got the Caps. But then you look, oh, all the Canadian teams are playing each other. And then Montreal somehow beats Edmonton, who is in the second round this year, and Toronto, who arguably had a chance to move on this year as well. But they're choke artists as well. Because, I mean, I think they've lost in the first round the past five years, something like that. It's crazy. So I just look at it this way and say last year was kind of a fluke. Isles year, you know, they had a really good season that year. I think it was the first year in a Trotz, so they basically had the whole entire, you know, comeback train or whatever when Trotz was coming to play us and whatnot or whatever. I just think that overall, this team, and I've said it multiple times, this team is starting to look their age. Now, right. I'm not saying that this team is terrible. I'm not saying this team is mediocre, not even average. I think this team is good. I think this is a really good team.
Mm-hmm.
Goaltending was good enough to win games, I would say, for the most part. I did see some tweets that said, oh, Samsonov lost us that game. I don't think he lost us a game.
Yeah,
I think at least in the last two games, he was hung out to dry a lot.
Yeah.
And I think Carlson, I even said it on Twitter, Carlson had a terrible game in game 4, I believe it was. actually, or it might have been game five, I believe, actually. And, you know, you can't go out there and make those mistakes when you're one of the best defensemen in all of the United States. You know, when I say the United States, because he plays for the USA, but I would say he's a top, probably a top 10 to 12 defender in the entire NHL. So you're looking at it and saying you can't go out there and make those mistakes, especially when you have a rookie in Martin Fehervari next to you and you're leaning on him to make the right decisions. It's like you shouldn't be having that. He should be making those mistakes, and then you should be making the right decisions.
Right.
So I called out John Carlson. I think he had a really bad series. But overall, just like you mentioned, we lost the lead in three of those games. And I even said it to myself the other day. One thing that every single analyst says for the playoffs is you have to score the dirty goals. You have to get in there. You have to, you know, get in the goalie's head. You have to go in there and, you know, give him a whitewash every now and then and start some scuffles. You have to make sure you get those dirty goals. We got so many dirty goals. You know, again, not dirty in the sense of like bad, like illegal, but I'm saying dirty in the sense of getting your hands dirty, like getting in the crease, pushing guys around, different things like that. And this is all without Tom Wilson. So TJ Oshie had a lot of those goals. TJ Oshie was in the crease a bunch of times. TJ Oshie had a great series. You know, we had some breakaways. We had some chances where we connected for those dirty goals, those hard hat, put your hard hat on goals, get in the crease and move some people around. But the problem is we didn't have those goals like we had. You know, everyone kept saying the power play was doing well. The power play was doing well. I don't even think the power play was that well because, yeah, okay, we scored five out of the first 20 power plays or something like that. Great, 25%. But this power play was not that good because I saw still a lot of they did make a change, I think, in the fourth game or something like that. I mean, the problem was they kept trying to hate this to no end, where they do the little, like, loop-de-loop skating in the defensive zone trying to, like, get momentum, and then they try to, like, somehow break through the defense like you're breaking through a wall, and all of a sudden, you know, they lose possession. They just dump it down the ice, and they do the same thing over again for the next 15, 20 seconds. It's like, I hate that. I hate that. I mean, you have to go in there and just dump it in and try to go fight for it. You have an extra guy for a reason. So put that guy down there trying to get there underneath the goal line. It made no sense because the sole fact that the power play wasn't that good. We played well enough. We got those dirty goals. It feels like this season was different, was a different first-round exit because of what they did specifically when it comes to what you need to get done in the playoffs, which I said, we did this year, the dirty goal aspect. We pushed people around. We scuffled a little bit. We tried to get in Bobrovsky's head, all these different things, but we didn't connect on the actual scoring, which we have in the past.
Yeah.
You know, in the past, they always used to say, man, like Alan May used to say it all the time. They need to get down down the dirt. They need to make sure they're doing all these different things down the crease and, you know, put some shots on net and try to get some rebounds or whatever. We did that this year. But in years past, we didn't. But in years past, we were shooting, you know, slappers and wristers from the blue line, different things like that. And we were making them for the most part, I should say. But those years, we weren't getting those down and dirty goals. And that's why they kept saying those year in and year out. But now it feels like the script was flipped to the point where we did one aspect and we didn't get enough of the other aspect. Ovi only scoring one goal in six games isn't good enough, especially his one goal was a wide open slapper. So that didn't really even count for the most part. I just think that we didn't get enough from our stars. When I talk about stars, I mean about John Carlson, Alex Ovechkin. Even though Alex Ovechkin did set the tone, he did play well, but I don't think he played well enough in the goal-scoring aspect with one goal in six games when you needed him the most. Now, Bobrovsky, we've done well against him in the playoffs, but I don't think he's some world beater. I don't think he's a Vezina trophy winner. So it's like, I just think that they kind of lacked in that aspect. And you know, honestly, the defense faltered late. I mean, that's just how it is. When you have a three-goal lead midway through the game, pretty much, you got to hold that lead. And, you know, when you have leads in all the last three games, I mean, we should have won that series. That's just all I'm saying.
Yeah. No, we absolutely should have. And there's going to be a lot of decisions to make here in this offseason. One of the biggest ones is who is going to be in net next year. You obviously have the ability to bring back Vanacek and bring back Samsonov. They're both restricted free agents, so you can, you know, kind of pull that off. And Brian McClellan was asked about that, and he did kind of say that there is a chance that they bring back both those goalies next year for the third consecutive season, or they may have to take a look around. I mean, the free agency, unfortunately, is not super filled with talent. I mean, you've got guys like Marc-Andre Fleury, of course, who screwed us over the last, you know, at the deadline. And you know, there's a few others out there like Halak, Martin Jones, Jack Campbell, Thomas Greiss, former Detroit Red Wing. I mean,
well, hey, look at Dallas though. Dallas has right. three goalies right now. Ottinger played really well so far in the playoffs. They unfortunately, as my dog, they ended up losing in overtime last night to almost upset the Flames. But they got our boy Braden Holtby.
Right.
They also got Ben Bishop. Now, I'm not sure if Ben Bishop's coming back or not. I'm not exactly sure. But they got three goalies. And Ottinger is going to be their starter most likely next season. So if they want to, you know, kick the can down the road on Holtby, and all of a sudden we want to say, hey, come on back, you know, yeah. live out the last few years of your career here and see what you can do. Who knows?
Yeah. No, and then, you know, there is this idea of this team probably needing to get younger. This is aside from talking about bringing Holtby back, obviously, but in general, the team possibly needing to get younger in a lot of different areas. And so we'll kind of see what McClellan and the Caps do here. I mean, there's definitely some big decisions to make. There's some guys that are getting up there in age, continue to get up there in age that, you know, like how long is Backstrom going to be on this team? You know, like how those types of guys where maybe you need to. But I've always felt like the Caps work best when they have a good mix of vets and young talent. I mean, that's the right. key. It's like you can't get too young. This isn't a rebuild at this point. It's more of a retool, as they say. Yeah. And so it'll be interesting to see what decisions.
Well, I mean, because they got Backstrom and Ovi for pretty much the rest of their careers. And the biggest thing is, I think personally, is the age showed because they couldn't hold the lead late.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that because of age? You know, it's up to speculation if that's what you think. I kind of think it was that because in previous years, you know, they could hold that lead. They could come back from behind. They could do right. those different types of things. I didn't think when they were down, you know, 3-4 or whatever it was in game 5 that they could come back. I just didn't have that feeling. You know, when we were dominated in game 4 at home, I didn't have that feeling. I mean, they shot 16 shots. I think they had 2 shots or something like that in the second period. I mean, that is something that's a little bit troublesome because, like you said, they need to get younger. They do have some young pieces in the minors. Martin Fervari obviously got a season under his belt. Mark Michael got a season under his belt. You know, we got some guys that got some experience, but that's not gonna, you know, that's not gonna cut it. You got to mm-hmm. get younger. You got to make moves. You got to figure out what you're gonna do. Now, I'm not saying make moves in the sense of you got to make, you know, trades and all this kind of stuff, because I think the more you trade, the more assets you lose, because we're not sitting here looking at our farm system and saying, oh man, this AAO, the Bears and Hershey are stacked, like we can just plug and play anybody. I just think that the moves they got to make are they got to start sliding in some of these young guns that we've been drafting over the years and see what they can do, because right now the age is starting to show, like I said, late in games where a team that has the firepower of the Panthers kind of easily did work with us in the last, what, you know, 30 minutes of the games. So that was unfortunate. We got to play a full 60 minutes, and I'm not exactly sure, not exactly confident that this team can do that in the playoffs.
Let's head up the final lap, a chance to cover some big stories in sports other than D.C. 90 seconds on the clock. Here we go. We will start with the NBA, Mike, as Luka Doncic takes down the Suns in Game 7, a blowout win over the Suns, and then the Celts also able to beat the Bucks in their Game 7.
It was insane. I was watching the Pens-Rangers game, and then all of a sudden my co-teacher texted me and said, man, Luka is taking off. And I was like, wait, what? And I looked at the score, 42-point lead. I was like, wait, what just happened? I mean,
I
the Suns, what a collapse they had last
couple love years. To see it. I'm not a big Devin Booker fan. Albert Pujols makes his first career pitching appearance the other day for the Cards, Mike. Looking like you out on the mound.
Didn't know that. Hey, I would love to look like him and actually hit over 500 home runs. That would be nice.
The Cincinnati Reds threw a no-hitter and lost the game. Nothing better than that, Mike.
is the Reds and the Pirates just going to keep playing each other?
I think so. Like, I think that's
they've had
the
like
only
four series in the last like 3 weeks. I don't understand it.
The New York Rangers rally from a 3-1 series deficit to win Game 7 in overtime. Kind of a wild series. Just shows you sometimes these NHL playoffs, man, they go all over the place.
Well, honestly, I think the Pens were the exact same thing that the Caps did, because the Pens did the exact same thing where they had leads in almost every single game, and they actually built up leads, you know, pretty much in every single game where they had 2-goal leads in most of those games. Crosby not, you know, being there for game six was a detriment. Tristan Jarry not being there for the pretty much the entire series was a detriment. But, I mean, the Rangers, I don't think it's a good look. I think, honestly, when you're playing a third-string goalie that basically was selling hot dogs at gyms or whatever the dog stand
Joe's,
was at.
Joe's hot dogs.
Joe's, sorry. he was, like, selling hot dogs at Joe's. You know, that's the funny thing is, like, Domingue came in there and actually did work for him. They gave him a chance to win. And the best part about it was, like, the Rangers just – I mean, they couldn't score on him for half the time. Yeah. I mean, they'd have a really great period, then they would just have a dud. I lost a lot of money on the Rangers. I wouldn't say a lot, but I lost money on the Rangers because I bet on them a lot because I didn't trust Domingue. But, of course, they come out in Game 7 in overtime.
I
do like their cheer at MSG when they're doing the stupid song, whatever that is.
Yeah.
I think it's a pretty cool cheer. But I just don't like the Rangers, so it annoys me also. So it's kind of like one of those double-edged swords.
And then, of course, Caps don't always love the Pens, so it's kind of nice to see the Pens lose. But also the Rangers are annoying too, so it's like pick your poison, really.
Yeah.
All right, let's hit up the trivia here. A chance to provide the folks at home with a DC sports and a Detroit sports trivia question. Just because we happen to own the same game in both teams, both cities, whatever.
Yep.
I'll let you go first this time. I feel like I've been going first lately.
Alrighty, so we're going to provide the fans with a great question. I had some questions, but I knew that you were not going to get the answer for them. So I ended up saying, you know what, I'll switch it up here.
Okay.
All right.
Keep in mind, I'm playing injured right now. My brain is a foggy mess, but I'll do my best.
Okay. Alrighty, so I don't know why this game has so many questions that are like in the 60s. Like, okay,
right.
let's be honest. Who's buying this game? Like, you know, Uncle Sam? all right, here we go. Nats question on deck. How many innings did the Nats and Giants play in Game 2 of the 2014 NLDS,
Ooh.
A game that lasted an MLB postseason record 6 hours and 23 minutes? I was at this game, first four seats behind the dugout.
Right.
I was on TV multiple times.
I remember that. I remember sending you pics of you. I remember there's one like with you holding a towel on your head while you're like in frustration, like with your hat and stuff. You're
yep.
Like, oh,
there it is.
God. I'm gonna go 16 innings. Am I wrong?
Yes.
Is it like 15?
Do you remember when they said that they played two full games?
Oh well, yeah, but that's interesting because I went to a. That must have been the longest postseason game for the Nats because I went to the longest regular season game for the Nats, which was, I think, 18 innings in the regular season. Okay, so it was 18.
It was 18,
there
yeah.
There you go.
They ended up losing, I believe it was 2-1. Jordan Zimmermann threw an unbelievable gem all the way into the ninth inning. And then Brandon Belt, I believe, scored.
He was a Nat killer. Brandon Belt would always hit bombs in the playoffs against the Nats.
Yeah, he's like a giraffe. He has like the longest neck. And he's so, like, tall and skinny, and he holds the bat like Brady Anderson did back in the day for the O's. It's just annoying.
It's crazy that some of those Giants guys are still around. I mean, like, Brandon Crawford's still their everyday starting shortstop. That guy's been playing for, like, 20 years, and he looks the exact same as he always has. It's nuts. My question for you, Mike, in his first season in Detroit, what goalie went 41-15 and helped the Red Wings win the President's Trophy? This is within the last, like... You know, 30 years.
That's good range.
First season in Detroit, the goalie went 41-15 and helped the Red Wings win the President's Trophy. Maybe I'll pinpoint the year for you. Let's see. Because it's not on the card. It wasn't 1940, I'll tell you that. Let's see.
Just type in Red Wings President's Trophy.
Just let me have my system here. All right, okay. I'll figure this out.
I'm trying to think of Red Wings goals.
2001.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yes, it's 2001.
10.
It's a famous name though, like for a goalie, like you know the.
Give me the initials.
DH. We stumped the Schwab, everybody.
I used to love that show.
Yeah. Dominic Hasek.
How is that a famous name?
Dominic Hasek was like
Dominic
one of the,
Hasek?
Yeah, he was Stanley Cup champ. I mean,
I was 10.
Come on. You got to know Dominic Hasek. He's in the Hockey Hall of Fame, 2014.
I don't even know where the Hockey Hall of Fame is located.
Wow. Wow. Disrespectful to my guy.
Where is it located? Detroit?
Dom. No. Hockey Hall of Fame. I think it's in Canada. I feel like it's in Toronto.
Ah, well, that doesn't count. It's not here.
It doesn't count. Well, okay. I'll let the wonderful people of Toronto know. Let's hit up the money line. Speaking of just garbage, terrible records.
Some rough times, bud.
I mean, it's just the worst thing in the world. I don't know if you, if you're dumb enough to take my picks, I don't know what you're doing. All right, my picks this week.
What happened to the fade part, man? You said you were going to fade.
Yeah, whatever. My lock. Warriors, -5.5 against the Mavs. It's going to go. I mean, the Mavs are going to beat them by 30. And then my dog. I actually like this pick. I like the Celtics +2 against the Heat. The Celtics are pretty hot right now. I do like that one. So I'm going to take the Celtics against the Heat.
Oh, boy. So I'm going to go with my lock. Over 6.5 goals, Tampa and Florida, game one. Braden Point is not playing for Tampa, so that might hurt Tampa's all-around game in general. So I still think the 6.5 is going to hit over the 6.5. I've been hitting overs left and right in the playoffs, and I think this one's going to hit. I think Florida kind of got that monkey off their back against the Caps, and Tampa, long series against Toronto. And I think that Florida might be a little bit easier for them personally. But I think over 6.5, I think it might be like a 4-3 game, 5-3, something of that nature. My dog, I'm going with the Dallas Mavericks +5.5. So I might gain a game on you. You might gain a game on me. I'm taking the Mavs +5.5 versus the Warriors, mainly because of the sole fact that, not because of Dinwiddie. Don't look at Dinwiddie. But I'm looking at Luka Doncic. Now, you know I've been a Luka homer for years now.
Sure.
I've said Luka is top five player for years, and he's just a monster. 35 and 10 in 30 minutes last night to blow out the number one seeded Suns. I just think that right now I wouldn't say a team of destiny, but I think they're a team that's on a mission. And I think right now the Warriors, yes, the Warriors are the Warriors. I just don't think that the Warriors are the team that everyone thinks they are. I think they're a little bit overrated, and I think some of the books might think that too, because right now 5.5 is not that many points. But I'm going to go +5.5 for the Dallas Mavericks for the dogs.
Yeah, I think the Mavs win the series, but I think Warriors win game one. That's my thinking.
I could see it.
That is our Moneyline Picks, sponsored by DraftKings. Please bet responsibly. That about does it for episode 112. Again, I remind you, this Wednesday will be the first episode of the new season of Bird's Eye View. You can check it out on our podcast feed as well as Bird's Eye View podcast, if you just search for that in your podcast place. Follow the show on Twitter @TheDCCrossover and @Cerrone16. And follow the TikTok, DC Crossover Podcast on TikTok. Mike's got the party going out on TikTok. He does all these dances and stuff. It's really a sight to see. So be sure to follow the show on there. Besides that, people,
I published those yet.
Yeah. A lot of those are in the drafts still, but he sends them my way, and I'm always like, come on, man. You got to post that. That you got some moves, man. That about does it for episode 112. We will see you next week. This has been another episode of the DC Crossover.